coming, everyone who is here. We recognize that we do actually have to look at apologies. Obviously, today's session is actually in line with the program we have before you. May I just check the apologies from the Secretariat?
We also have a challenge.
Sorry, check.
Yeah, we don't have it. I was just going to do that.
Oh, the agenda.
Yes. Chair, we have an administrative issue. We forgot to print the agenda, so members won't have a copy of the agenda. I probably have three extra copies in that other folder, but maybe you have to read the agenda for the members. Should I read? Yeah. Okay. The members, the agenda as follows. There's the opening and welcome. We'll do apologies, and then we'll adopt the agenda. After that, we'll get a briefing by the Office of the AG. That will be from the minute after that, from quarter to 12 to quarter to 1, or up to 1 o'clock, depending on the engagement, which will be followed by lunch, a half an hour lunch break. And then we'll get the DTI to brief the committee on the annual report, followed by a tea break. Then EDD will do exactly the same. The intention, according to the program, is to finish at 6:30, but it's all dependent on members if we finish 6:30 earlier or later. Transport has been arranged, but if members finish 8:00, then members will travel with a bus and not individual transport. So just to make that clear, members will also in the presentation that they receive from the AG, there was a questionnaire. If members can just complete, at the request of the AG's office, to complete the questionnaire, and Yvonne will collect it during lunchtime to hand it over. That was at their request. But that is the agenda. With regard to apologies, Chair, the only apology that we received was from Mr. Cuthbert, who was attending a WTO conference. We received no other apologies. Thanks.
Apology that we don't have any screen, but I think the issues as presented, we do have a session till 6:30. One actually was just thinking maybe we should hear from honourable members if you're comfortable with that approach. The AG's office is here, and we'd actually do the support of the department as well. And maybe I can just check if we can be able to adopt the agenda as a committee to be able to proceed in that way.
Chair, as I rise to adopt the agenda, I'm just very worried that the official opposition is absent, but maybe they've caucused the other parties. They are here. Oh, okay. So I propose that we accept the agenda as tabled.
Okay. If I can get the seconder for that, honourable members, comfortable with that? Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I second the adoption of the agenda.
Okay. The form that we asked to fill is this one. It's from the AG. If you can, then can lunchtime, we can actually pass it back to the AG's office. So in terms of having actually adopted the agenda, I'm sure I can be able to welcome the AG's office, acknowledge everyone who's here, and welcome all of you, and ask that we go through the presentation. I'm sure we actually, the one we have reflected on the screen. So can we ask the AG's office to introduce the whole team of those who are here to actually support us?
Sorry, Chief, could I get a copy of that survey questionnaire form that needs to be filled?
Okay. Okay, Andrew will do that. Okay. Floor is yours.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Thank you very much for the opportunity to be here at the Office of the Auditor General for this briefing today. I'm going to introduce myself and then hand over to the team who will also do the introductions. My name is Mabatu Sedikela. I'm a corporate audit executive at the Office of the Auditor General, responsible for Northwest, the Gauteng province, and various ministries within the National Air Portfolio. And then with me here today is Tepo Shawangu and the other SMs who will lead the briefing, but I'm also here to support in terms of questions for the Office. again, thank you for the opportunity.
It's not too late or to have actually good sense of who's here from your office. Having introduced yourself, it's fine, but we can hear who's all here. Yeah.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Good day, Honorable Members. My name is Tsepo Shabangu from the Office of the Auditor General. I'm responsible for the Department of Trade and Industry portfolio, as well as EDD and Presidency. Yes.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good day, Honorable Members. I'm Mohadi Maskela. I'm responsible for the audit of SABS, Senior Audit Manager there.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning, members, Honorable Members. My name is Murunga Mashihu. I'm the Senior Manager on the NRCS audit as well as the NLC group. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Good morning, good day, Honorable Members. I'm Sizwe Nxumalo, responsible for the audit of Department of Trade and Industry.
Morning. I'm Lerato Powe. I'm the Senior Manager in the Office of the Corporate Executive.
Good morning, Karin Khruvia, Stakeholder and Liaison Manager, AG.
Good morning, Nomathemba Nxumalo, I'm the Assistant to the SLM.
The item is here, floor is yours. We can proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'll be taking you through the presentation regarding the AGSA contribution towards the budgetary review and recommendation report process. I'll start off with the reputation promise / our mission, which states that the Auditor General of South Africa has a constitutional mandate. And as a supreme audit institution, we exist to strengthen our country's democracy through auditing by enabling oversight, accountability, and governance in the public sector through auditing, thereby building public confidence. This is also aligned to our vision, which states that we would like to be recognized by all the relevant stakeholders, including the Portfolio Committee, as a relevant supreme audit institution that enables public sector accountability. Our role in the budgetary review and recommendations report is to reflect on the audit results for the 2018-19 financial year, to assist the Portfolio Committee to reflect on the audit outcomes of the portfolio, considering the objective of producing the budgetary review and recommendations report. And in doing so, we'll be sharing the information and also providing guidance to the Portfolio Committee with regards to the focus areas that will enable you to exercise your oversight role over the DTI portfolio. And we believe that through our assistance, you'll be able to enable effective governance in our portfolio. Honorable Chair, the presentation will be mainly focusing on the audit outcomes for the 2018-19 financial year. Firstly, I'll take you through our annual audit examination areas. Audit focuses on the three areas, namely the first one being the audit of the financial statements, which is the famous one, the one we normally, whereby we issue the different types of audit opinions, which will be explained in the following slides. The second type of audit that we perform is the audit on the predetermined objectives, This is where we audit the departments and entities against what they planned at the beginning of the year, against what they reported and achieved in the annual performance report. The third component of the process is the audit of compliance with laws and regulations. That's where we derive the term material non-compliance with laws and regulations that we normally share with the departments, entities, as well as the portfolio committees. Honorable Chair, the slide here explains the different types of audit opinions that we issue on the audit of the financial statement, which is the first aspect in the previous slide. Chair, the first part is the green one, where we say we issue this one, we normally call it the clean audit, where the department and entity manages to issue credible and reliable financial statements. This is the type of opinion that we would really like to see in all departments and entities. The second one is where a department or entity is financially unqualified, but they got tripped in the compliance with laws and regulations or the report on performance information. The third one is a qualified audit opinion. This one, we state that, yes, you have submitted your financial statements. However, except for a particular issue or issues, we accept your financial statements, but you still need to improve on certain things, which automatically disqualifies you from being issued with a certificate of reliable and credible financial statements. The third one is the adverse opinion. The difference between adverse opinion and qualified opinion is the fact that the adverse opinion, the material misstatements are so pervasive to such an extent that you cannot say that the entire set is reliable and credible. So it's worse off than the qualified opinion. Final opinion that we issue is a disclaimer of opinion. This is the worst case scenario, and this is you want to be here. That's where we say there's a limitation of scope. We couldn't express an opinion. We couldn't be provided with the supporting documents to support the transactions and balances in your financial statements. This should be avoidable at all costs. Chair, the following slide, slide number 7, here we're just highlighting the fact that this presentation will be based on the 12 audits that were audited by the Auditor General in-house. The presentation will exclude the Section 4.3 audits, which are the audits that we opted not to audit. They are audited by the private audit firms. They include your NEF, your IDC, your MISA, SANAS, and so forth. So we'll be focusing on the 12 that we did in-house. And we'll be using the various colors there to express the category of the audit outcome. And these colors are different from the colors that we... These ones are different from the audit opinion slide that we... This is the overall audit outcomes, including a combination of the three types of audits that we are performing, because the previous categories were purely limited to the financial side of the audit. So these colors will be there to express the overall audit outcomes. And you'll see there also we have a blue color referring to outstanding audits. There is no outstanding audit in this portfolio. So all audits were finalized in the DTI and EDD portfolio. And we'll also be using the arrows, the green one for improvement and the yellow one for unchanged, as well as the red one for regression. And Chair, we tried to add the acronyms for the portfolio committee, because DTI and EDD, they have a lot of entities, so we may get lost trying to figure out what the CT mean, or NCR and RCS. So members can refer back to the acronyms. Chair, the next slide is the accountability wheel. this slide, Chair, the accountability will break down the requirements and responsibilities basically bestowed upon the accounting officer and accounting authority in terms of the PFMA. I'll use the example maybe that is relevant to this portfolio to say, because, for example, DTI, if they plan at the beginning of the year that they will issue 800 incentives to 800 beneficiaries at the beginning of the year, there must be proper planning and budgeting process to ensure that 800 is achieved. And for that 800 incentives to be issued, management must ensure that there's controls in place that will enable the department to deliver on the 800 incentives. And the emphasis here is also placed on the preventative controls because they are more effective than the reactive one where you come after the effect. So once the department puts those processes, like the application process, the criteria, the adjudication process, those are the controls to ensure that the incentive process is fair, transparent, and achieves the mandate for which the department was established for. And once that happens, now we move over to the line manager's responsibilities to ensure that during the application process, there are reviews and monitoring to ensure that whoever is getting those incentives qualifies against the criteria, and whether those incentives are still within the budget. So line managers as well as the accounting officers have a role to play in this accountability wheel. And once everything is in process, the quarterly monitoring as well must come into play where the department reports to the relevant oversight bodies or those charged with governance to say this, at the beginning of the year we promised 800 incentives, this is how far we are and this is what is tripping us, and whatever is tripping them must be followed up accordingly. The next layer should be if there's errors or misstatements or mistakes, those must also be followed up. And that's where we talk about consequence management. And what we're saying is that consequence management is not always or should not always be a punitive exercise. When we talk about consequence management, we're not only referring to dismissal of people or suspensions and so forth. It can also result into training and also correction of a mistake, because some of these things are a mistake. It's not always an issue of fraud or corruption. And once these systems are in place, we say a department or entity which implements the accountability wheel properly, it's possible for it to achieve clean audit outcomes. And in an environment where clean audit outcomes are standard, it's standard practice, there's a highly likelihood of service delivery, of a department or entity doing what it is meant to do. But and over and above this, when we try to link this to our expanded mandate of the PAA, which literally emphasizes this, is nothing new. We say if you have proper preventative controls to ensure that everything happens accordingly, everyone does what they are supposed to do in the process, from the initiation to the conclusion of a transaction or an incentive, then there is likelihood that there will be less cases which are classified as material irregularities, which now have to be dealt with in a more expensive manner, like investigations and commission of inquiries and all those sort of things. So if everyone plays their part, we can also save money for the state by avoiding such occurrences of commissions and investigations. Honorable Chair, with your permission, would like to focus on this slide because it sums up the portfolio's performance over the 5-year period, and we'll also touch on the key root causes as well as the key recommendations for the portfolio. And the rest that follows is a detail to address or to show what caused these outcomes. Yes. Chief, if you look at the movement, I'll start with year on year, you'll see that there was an improvement in three auditees, a significant movement being the one by SABS from a disclaimer to a qualification. And the next one being the Competition Commission from qualification with findings to a clean audit, as well as the National Lotteries Commission from a qualification to a clean audit. And then there was no regression in the portfolio, meaning there's no audit that moved the level below. Nine of the auditees remained in their previous positions, and we commend them for that, except for NRCS, because the position in which they remained is not a desirable position, which is a qualification. And so overall, when you look at the portfolio, you will see that year on year, the number of clean audits increased from 36% in 2014-15 to now 83% of the portfolio achieving clean audits. And that is attributable to the guidance and oversight role also played by the leadership in terms of guiding the department and the entities. And it's clear in terms of the overall audit outcome that they are doing something right, even though these two problematic entities. Yes. But, Chair, when we get into the nitty-gritties of SABS received a qualification. I'll ask my colleague to assist me with SABS.
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Chair and the Honourable Members. With regards to the SABS audit outcome movement, so in the 2017-18 financial period, which is the one that passed, they had a disclaimer, and that was due to going concern issues. Basically, on going concern, there was an issue on SABS Commercial, being the subsidiary of SABS, where they had financial viability problems. What about the assets? Basically, were not sufficient to support their liabilities. And more critically as well, because SABS Commercial is established to actually generate revenue from their testing and certification services, there was not enough capacity there to generate that revenue. So there was a very material uncertainty in terms of, can they continue to generate enough revenue going forward in order to support the operations and that mandate of SABS? And there was a material uncertainty there because one, there was not enough funding flowing from SABS to SABS Commercial, even though the mandate is then linked. And as indicated, there were not enough secured revenue in terms of testing services that they perform, where they will test goods and services locally to certify them that they are of the right quality and all of that. So that was also not generating enough. Hence, then there was that disclaimer to say there's not enough evidence to support their continued operations and the mandate. Moving to 18-19, they then went to a qualified opinion, mainly due to that financial viability to a large extent being addressed. There were some interventions from Department of Trade and Industry, being the mother body, where they've injected additional infrastructure fund that will go into reviving some of the aging infrastructure in terms of the testing function. And there's also been a turnaround strategy where they're engaging the lost market. One of the factors that contributed to actually revenue declining significantly was because of also a loss of customers as a result of partial testing being discontinued and expired payments where they were not collecting enough revenue from that. So work has started in that. So to a large extent, then the financial viability was not as threatening anymore. And we've seen also a turnaround this year whereby SABS will share the grant. So the grant allocation now is divided between the two mandates. So what remains then in the current year is certain areas in terms of the financial reporting that then led to still the qualified audit opinion. Okay, going into detail in terms of 18-19, then the remaining issues there mainly relate to the revenue. However, the revenue now is more on the accounting of it in terms of in the financial statements where we have two qualifications, one emanating from SABS Commercial. SABS Commercial is the subsidiary where the labs in terms of testing the completeness, there's not enough control there to ensure that to ensure that all testings are actually accounted for and they collect all that revenue. So there's control deficiency there, that's the one qualification. And on the other side of things, in terms of the standards, we know that the SABS and the mandate, they issue standards as well. So accounting for that revenue, there's subscriptions where you have to actually focus the revenue in the year that it relates to. So there's not controls as well where there's problems in terms of when do we account for revenue. So if a contract runs from now, from October, it will end in September. So it will overlap over two financial periods in terms of accounting for it. So you need to actually have proper contract management in place so that you determine the split. So you don't show the revenue achieved for the next year in this year or the revenue that you have not yet earned in that. So that split was a problem, and they were not able to resolve it on time, so it resulted in revenue being qualified. And the other main one is this year that arose is irregular expenditure. In irregular expenditure, there were also deficiencies in terms of the measures that they have in place. As accounting authority, they have to prevent, if they cannot prevent, detect, irregular expenditure and account for it. But because there hasn't been a lot of instances of irregular expenditure in the past in SABS, so there was not enough measures in place to actually detect and therefore disclose irregular expenditure that has occurred. And that was mainly impacted by contract management. You can see we keep on bringing contract management, so there's an issue, a gap in terms of how they manage their contract management. So we've had a couple of instances where the entity has found that they've overspent on a contract. And then in terms of then the PFMA overspending on a contract results in irregular expenditure. And the other second cause of the irregular expenditure then was from Honorable Chair, deviations. So deviations that were not either not approved at the appropriate level or they should not have deviated in that instance. Yes, those are the main qualification areas. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Mukadi. I think also the spillover, because there was a qualification on revenue, on the two types of revenue, the one for subscriptions and the one for the laboratory. It also spilled over to the performance information because the target is measured based on the revenue. So if you were limited to conclude or your conclusion was negative on the financial side because they use the same supporting document. So we just want to highlight that.
So in terms of the link on the revenue, yes, basically revenue will also be reported on in terms of predetermined objectives. So it's a key indicator, as indicated, because it's very vital to the financial viability of the SABS commercial. So the target linked to that was then the productivity of the laboratory. So they will then measure the laboratories in the testing and certification area to say, are they breaking even? Are they making costs? Are they meeting costs? And the determining factor is that then your total revenue compared to your cost. So if your revenue is then qualified, which means your revenue is it's not reliable, it's not complete, then it becomes an issue to say the achievement that you're then going to report on that target, is it also then reliable, hence then the spillover. Then you find that two targets in terms of total revenue that has been reported and then the productivity and efficiency of the labs could not be measured accurately. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm going to be taking you through the reflections on NRCS. If I may, Honorable Members, on NRCS, we see that they've remained fairly in the purple category, which is the qualification space. They have been qualified on revenue over the past 5 years. No progress has been seen in that area. Although they have tried to implement a finance plan and some sort of methodology with regards to their estimates, they still remain qualified. Mainly this is due to them being unable to recognize all the customers that need to pay levies, and they're also unable to record all the revenue that is due to them, as well as recording them in the correct financial period. The main reason for this could be attributed to instability in key management positions. We found that the position of the finance manager has been vacant for more than 12 months. This had a big impact also on the regression of the audit outcome in terms of the qualification. There was lack of proper record keeping at NRCS in the space of HR. We also found that the SM for senior manager for HR, the position was also vacant, as well as senior manager SCM. So these key instability in these positions actually had an impact on the regressions of the audit outcomes. So we found that there was additional qualification paragraph in addition to the revenue on provision for leave as well as employee benefits, because there were inadequate records to support the numbers that were recorded and disclosed in the financial statements. The entity was also heavily reliant on consultants for the preparation of the financial statements due to the vacancy of the finance manager. During the audit, we got a tip-off on fraud allegations. This came to our attention during the reporting phase of the audit. And as a result, we had to delay our signing, so our mandated date or legislated date should be the 31st of July. However, we had to move our date so that we would be able to address, in terms of our audit processes, this, the fraud allegations risk. We also followed our methodology in terms of informing the relevant oversight structures with regards to the allegations that came to our attention. We informed the Minister of DTI, as well as the audit committee and the CEO, so they were aware of these allegations that came to our attention, and we performed the necessary procedures. Nothing came out of that the procedures that we performed. However, we were able to conclude on the audit, and the opinion remained as a qualification based on the areas that I have highlighted. Thank you.
Thank you, Roma and Mukhadi. Honorable Chair, just to sum up the overall audit outcomes for our portfolio for the 2018-19, it is clear that the portfolio is doing well overall, except for the two entities. And based on the conversation or the presentation, it is clear that from where we're sitting, our observation with regards to the key root causes for these outcomes, the first one being the slow response with regards to addressing the issues that have been raised purely on the side of the SAPS, because we see that they are moving, but they are not there yet. So there's still a lot of work that needs to be done in that regard with regards to all the issues that we have been raising regarding internal controls that are not being effective, as well as for NRCS, there we're saying there is no response, because if you look at the audit outcomes, they've been on the same, they haven't moved for the past 5 years. They've been qualified for 5 years. So there we're saying there is no response to address the issues that have been raised over the years. The other part of the root causes is the vacancies in key positions, especially at NRCS. We had Moronga saying that the head of finance, the head of SCM, and the head of HR, they've been vacant, as well as the CIO. And as long as those positions are not filled, stability will not be realized yet in RCS. Yes, we can also touch on SABS, because we know it's under administration now, because there's three people who are being delegated to play the accounting authority role there. So I think if they can address the vacancies in key positions as well, it will enable them to play a part in that accountability wheel there with regards to implementation of controls and monitoring and accountability. And Chair, the other one is the consequence management, especially at NRCS, is where if there is no response in terms of addressing the qualification area, then there needs to see consequence management. Those are the top three root causes that we picked up from analyzing the audit outcomes. And
it does look like the slide 9, which you have on the screen. It's actually quite an important one, because it looks at the 5 years that on the colors. I'm doing quite well. If I drive, I can see the three colors. The other colors you're adding, I'm sure you've tried to explain, it made a bit of sense. So when it's green, what's the other one? It's when it's yellow, and then when it's red. And you know what those outcomes mean. I think the sense of green being more, which means we're actually moving a bit, and having actually less caution and going straight to blue without red, so it doesn't look bad. But red in terms of just 1 year on the SABS does actually reflect that there are things which are challenges that we may have to look at. So I think one is just looking at this slide as quite a significant one, just to get sense of where we are and how we got ourselves to that situation. So I think one would like to actually then agree that you proceed in terms of actually picking up on the other issues, because I can see that the NRCS, SABS, and NLC has got some highlighted points linked to what we have on the slide. So unless there are further comments, maybe we can proceed. If ever there's any comments, maybe we can pick up on that as an AG's report. But because I think it makes complete sense, yeah, we can actually then be able to pick up on the next one. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. With your permission, can we jump over to slide 21? Chair, the slide talks to the fruitless and wasteful expenditure in the overall portfolio. Chair, the fruitless expenditure talks to expenditure that could have been avoided had a reasonable care been exercised by the person spending the money or procuring a product or a service. So if you look at the year-on-year comparison, you'll see that in the prior year, the portfolio had a regular expenditure of $2 million compared to $1.1 million. Sorry, I'm already in the next slide. Apology. We used to irregular expenditure. Yeah. No. Sorry, Chair. My colleagues are correcting me. 200,000. The comma there. Sorry, Honorable Chair. Yes. Yes, slide 21. Can I proceed? Okay, thank you, Honorable Chair. Chair, you'll see that the bulk of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure comes from the Economic Development Department, which relates to the payment of a bonus to a person that was not eligible to receive the bonus. And I mean, it covers the almost the entire fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And the next one relates to the SABS, which relates to interest and penalties on late payment of suppliers, which amounts to 58,000, and SARS late payment, VAT related payments of 17,000. We also included the one for NCR, which is 1,200. So this sums up the fruitless and wasteful expenditure in the portfolio. But if you look at the investigation, we can comfortably say that all the fruitless and wasteful expenditure in the portfolio has been investigated. That was raised previously. The next slide, number 22, it talks to the irregular expenditure in the portfolio. The irregular expenditure is the expenditure incurred in contravention of the key legislation in the procurement of goods. If you look at the irregular expenditure year on year, you'll see that the irregular expenditure has decreased almost to half in 2018-19 compared to 2017-18. It moved from 134 million to 72 million. And Competition Commission had a role to play there with almost 50% 50% of the irregular expenditure emanating from the Competition Commission, which was mainly caused by the not following the procurement process for the procurement of legal services, including other experts as well. And the NRCS is following Competition Commission there, where the majority was caused by non-compliance with the procurement requirements. And 371,000 is for payment of expired contracts. SABS also had its fair share there, Honorable Chair, with the majority of the irregular expenditure relating to overspending on certain contracts amounting to 5.5 million in 2018-19 financial year and 3.8 million relating to irregular expenditure from the prior year but only identified in the current financial year. Chair, The irregular expenditure that has been identified also in the previous year has been investigated in the portfolio, which is encouraging. Chair, I think I missed the slide number 18. Apologies. Yes, sorry to take you back, Chair. Okay, thank you, Honourable Chair. Yeah, this slide is just a follow-up on our previous engagement on capacity building. Now we are reflecting on what transpired from this engagement with the departments and entities. The status of records review is an enhancement of the previous key control assessment, which we used to do as an office. Now we engage with the accounting officers and authorities together with management as a warning system to warn the departments and entities about the pitfalls or areas that may cause material misstatements or non-compliance when they report later. And if you look on your right, they were reflecting on the contribution of the status of records review to the current year's audit outcomes. You'll see number one state talks to the things that we highlighted through status of records review, and now they are resolved. You will see that NLC, the management managed now to consolidate the NLTP to the group financial statements, which resolved last year's qualification. And the same applies to SABS, which now moved out of the disclaimer because the going concern issue is being managed with the intervention of the mother department. However, the matters involved mentioned in number two, they are matters of concern because even though they were raised during the SORR, the status of records review, some of the issues are still there, especially in NRCS and SABS, as we mentioned throughout the engagement. So we'd like the committee to also pay attention to this as part of the recommendation. When the entities come and report on a quarterly basis, just to track. Yes. Honourable Chair, this is just a snapshot of the portfolio's performance during the 2018-19 financial year compared to the prior year. We're giving a snapshot on the clean audit, which moved from 67% last year to 83%, where that's where we commend the department and the entities for the efforts that they put in to ensure that there's an improvement in the audit outcome. And Chair, with regards to the financially unqualified financial statements, there's also an improvement from 80% to 83% in the current year. And findings on performance reporting, there's a decline of 1% there compared to the prior financial year. So we'd like the portfolio to focus on the area as well. Non-compliance with legislation, there's an improvement as well, where we see less audits with material non-compliance with laws and regulations findings in the current year compared to the prior year. And another improvement, Chair, is with regards to the irregular expenditure year on year, where we could see that it halved from 134 million to 72 million in the current financial year. Chair, we've already touched on the root causes earlier when we discussed the audit outcomes, which mainly relates to NRCS and SABS. Chair, these are the recommendations that we would like to leave the portfolio committee with. We split the recommendations between the portfolio committee as well as those for the departments and their entities, mainly focusing on NRCS and SAPS. For the portfolio committee to request management to provide feedback on the implementation and progress of the action plans to address poor audit outcomes during quarterly reporting at SABS and NRCS. We also request for the portfolio committee to request feedback on the progress of filling of vacant positions at NRCS. And lastly, to follow up on implementation of consequence management by obtaining a status update on the actions taken against transgressors at NRCS.
Thank you very much. Maybe what we can do, we actually just check if ever there's any final comments from colleagues so that we can actually then conclude your presentation, then come back and pick up on the issues as the committee, just to follow through on what you've actually presented to us.
Chair, without going into too much of the detail, I think there's slide 24, which Tep already touched on, which is the key expansion of our mandate. And you would be aware that effective from the 1st of April, our expanded powers have become effective. We have done it at 16 audits, and none of the DTI portfolio were affected by this. When the AG tables the general report, we will be reflecting on the outcome of our expanded powers. I know it's of interest in various structures, so I just thought that I would give mention to that. The key thing here for the DTI, which eventually once we expand our coverage, the audit, the departments and the entities in this space will equally be subject to the legislation. But what's most critical that I want to point out here is what Tepo mentioned, that our legislation seeks to complement the existing PFMA requirements. Section 55 has got many responsibilities that it bestows upon the accounting authority and the accounting officers. And with our accountability wheel, we were talking about reinforcing the basics of the plan do check act cycle. We're saying if everybody attends to that which is required of them in legislation, there will be minimal instances where we would need to invoke such requirements as issuing potentially certificates of debt and issuing binding remedial actions. So we are encouraged by the discipline that is evident in this portfolio in terms of dealing decisively with adhering to the prescripts of the law, in terms of improving their AOPO and in continuing to improve their financial the credibility of their financial reporting. And I think if they attend to the consequence management, it would be unlikely that we'd find instances of material irregularities arising. So we're going to encourage, as Tepo has said, that attendance to the consequence management is something that they should attend to and prioritize, because if it is, then there's very limited need for us to invoke the amendment. And also in closing, the key concept of preventative and detective controls are of utmost importance. We've seen that they're evident in the portfolio. We encourage that management continue to enforce those. Oversight needs to continue to get confirmation that the right energy and discipline over those preventative and detective controls is sustained, so that the expansion of our mandate does not necessarily need to see the light of day in the portfolio. And thank you, Chair. I think those are just the closing comments on our side. And I think as you summarized earlier with that slide, that they are moving into the right, they're moving in the right direction. The green color, which is the desired one, is of most importance. And then in conclusion, slide 29 really just summarizes our audit effort, which is that we'll continue to engage with management predominantly through the status of records on the two affected auditees so that we don't leave them and only see them at the time of the finalization of the audit. In our CS needs a lot of attention, and Moronga here continues to engage them, and I think SABS is on the right trajectory. And the outcome of these slides and the entire BRRR process will enjoy the interaction of the AG as he does his roadshows, and then we continue to capacitate and collaborate with management and yourself. Thank you very much, Chair.
So one may want to just note the roadworthiness of your presentation, because you're actually getting the roadrunners representing part of what you're doing in terms of work. So, because on your slide number 5, so there's some sense of roadworthiness. And even the next slide, the sixth one, it's actually the creative part of those who actually participate, which is quite helpful. So I would actually ask maybe from honorable members that maybe we can actually just look through maybe the first 10 slides, if ever there are any comments. But can I just open up for members, then the team will note, and then let me take Mulder, Trip, and then Yako, Montashe, and then Mutang, Sintate, McPherson, and then winning out. Okay, in that order. Floor is yours.
Thank you, Chair. Without going into too much detail, I've got a general question that I want to ask. I see terms like underspending, overspending, irregular spending, non-compliance, vacancy rate of critical positions, etc., which is clearly the cause of the outcome that we've seen here today, but it's been reported. So what I want to know is, who appointed these people? I mean, what measures been taken, investigations, are they ongoing? Will there be consequences? What is the vacancy rate in the department as far as this reporting is concerned? Vacancy rate of critical positions. And the main thing is the necessary expertise available to overcome this challenge? I mean, someone have appointed or has not appointed the necessary people to fill these positions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think, firstly, we want to welcome and thank the Office of the Auditor General for their report. It is insightful. Obviously, it also still comes with concerns, and while we welcome the improvements over the different financial years, there are still some concerns. I think, Chair, one can never accept mediocrity. We look at SABS moving from a disclaimer to sort of qualified audit report with findings. It's like jumping from the fire or jumping from the frying pan of 120 degrees into the oven, which is 60 degrees, but the outcome is still the same. You still get cooked, unless those who have been appointed to deal with the issues at SABS indeed do just that. So we cannot, I think, accept mediocrity, and I think certainly while we welcome it, I don't think it's anything to really clap hands about. There are still some serious concerns with SABS. I didn't get the lady's name who presented on NRCS, but I thought I heard you make a statement saying that there was a process engaged in terms of trying to turn NRCS around, but nothing came out of the process that was put in place. So I would like for you to perhaps, are you able to tell me why? Why do you think it was that nothing came out of that particular process? And then I think in conclusion, Chair, the Auditor General now has teeth, and they have an expanded mandate. I thought I heard that there were 16 auditees that were being looked at in terms of that particular expanded mandate. Why were none of the entities like the NRCS included in that? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I also welcome the presentation. I just want to just say a couple of things. I think I once commented that the office of the AG, at times it feels like it's doing a sort of repetitive job every year and nothing seems to change. And I think that's the issue why maybe we don't see movement in departments, because they know that each year you'll come and make recommendations and there won't be any kind of consequence management or enforcing of consequence management in the different departments. Personally, I would have liked to see, you've audited 12 entities or SOAs. I would have liked to see a breakdown of each one to say, for me it's confusing how it's put in the graphs, to say this is, we're doing now, say, SABS. So SABS is standing on its own, and like how you've done with that, and you do it with all the other 11 entities in that way. So we see the movement of each and every entity in a separate way, not in the way that's sort of bundled. So you don't see, you're not getting a clear picture of is there quite an improvement or is there none. That's my second comment. And thirdly, with regards to the waste, the frictless and wasteful expenditure in EDD, what has been done as yet in terms of making sure that that doesn't happen again? And then lastly, how often do you do oversight during the year on the different entities to see if there's progress being made? And then also, where do you want us as law enforcers to come in and say we want to do oversight and these are our recommendations to make sure that there's some sort of action that's happening? Where are you struggling? Which departments are you struggling with that are not cooperating with you and that are not seeing, where you're not seeing movement taking place? And then we'll come in and we'll assist you.
Thank you, Chairperson. We appreciate the presentation from the AG Chairperson, because they are our compass in trying to do proper oversight over the department and its entities. But I just need one clarity. They have not been specific on NRCS. They have made mention of fraud allegations, but they did not explain explicitly what that meant. What is it? What type of fraud? What has gone wrong so that we can, as we engage with the department and its entities, do oversight over that thing, over the allegations of fraud. Otherwise, the rest of the questions, I think, are relevant for the department when we meet it. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. Let me welcome the report and applaud the department with the improvement and in its majority of its entities. I have only two questions. One, I've heard the lady from NRCS saying you have appointed the consultant who were doing the financial statements for you. I just want to check, after the appointment of the consultant, is there any improvement the quality of those financial statements after the appointment of the consultant? Secondly, the issue of the vacant positions in the key positions, is there any progress on trying to fill those positions? And then lastly, Lastly, the AG. Is there any program or monitoring way that you can do to the two entities, NCRC and the SAB, to try to assist them, especially where they are lacking a bit for them to get their financials properly? Thank you, Chair.
Chair, thank you very much. Let me welcome the presentation. Also applaud the department where there's improvement. But Chair, I'm not so sure because here, in terms of the NCRS, there's no improvement. And also, we are not even, we're unable even to recognize customers and the pay services. So I'm not sure whether are we still intact as a department, Chair, because if you check the SORR and also the ICT, because the last time they were here, they spoke of the ICT system computer, which is not functional, and also they spoke of infrastructure development, which is aging, where they are housed. So are there any recommendation by the department to can be able to assist the entity? Because coming here, whether the entity, because they working in the aging infrastructure, and also the ICT is not working. So I wanted to check also with the department to say, are we able to assist them? And if we are, how far are we in terms of the changing of the system there? And also, if they say no proper recording keeping for the provision of leave, Chair, it's very much worrying. Because as I'm here now, I've signed an attendance register. They know whether I'm at work or I'm not at work. So if the department could not even attach and ask attendance registers to this one is attended or not attended, it's very worrying. Chair, let me also, as a committee, take the recommendation from the AG to say what definitely request the management to give us a feedback in terms of what is happening in the entity, and also to request the feedback from the filling of vacancies. Because even the CEO was acting CEO, everybody's acting in the NCRS. So let us check as to we need intervention, how can we be able to implement those. And also check the consequences, whether they are there or not, because we will talk 5 years period since one thing is happening. And so we must at least have consequence management to say, how are we able to deal with those entities, Chairperson? One, but not last, I'm not so sure whether that laboratory is still functional, Chair. We're told that it's in bad condition and it's aging. So thank you very much, Chair.
I'm sure for the comments that one would actually like to pick up on, there is actually managing of the transition as well. So there might be points raised at an earlier point, which actually may not be part of what was presented here and now today. So I think when one actually looks through the slides, you actually did pick up on areas where you're saying key reflections. You were actually highlighting issues which are quite important for us to note. And obviously, in terms of the presentation that you give, we would actually then have to just work with you to have sense what is it that we need to do. But I think one actually notes, Mbuyane, the point that has been actually raised before, because obviously if an issue gets raised in the committee, there is some sense of follow-up. Would like to know that if things are not going okay, like here, I think if you look at slides 10 and 11, it does actually isolate a few entities, and there's actually reflections on that. And one would like to actually know where are we and how are we actually doing and what's the way forward on that. And further, when you look at slide 21 and slide 22, there are actually key areas that are actually highlighted as well around those areas where there's specific, because the good thing as well is that reported issues were investigated. So obviously with what is actually reflected here, we do have a way forward on how we're actually going to take the process forward. And maybe what might be actually also useful is to actually see that there is an improvement. You know, the five-year period does actually show that there is actually improvement. And on the basis of that, there's only, I think it will be three instead of two, as reflected here, entities that we may actually have to say, where do we start and what is it that we may need to do in engaging, in ensuring that some action gets taken and implementation happens moving forward. So I think it's actually those general points I wanted just to raise. But there are questions maybe that were raised by members who would actually want to allow you to comment and or respond to some of the questions. And then we'll hear from members if ever there are further issues they would like to raise. Floor is yours, AG's office.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and members, for your questions. I'm going to answer those questions that specifically speak to NRC as I was the senior manager on that audit. The number one question that we got was with regards to the vacancy rate. Specifically, as our presentation mainly spoke to key vacant positions in management positions, so the vacancy rate when we did the audit was at 20%. So that is usually, in terms of government, in the government space, the acceptable vacancy rate is 10%. So at senior management at NRCS is 20%, mainly influenced by those key three positions, such as the finance manager, SCM manager, as well as the HR. Close to year end, then there was then the vacancy of the CIO at the entity. So I hope that one is answered. With regards to the appointment of consultants for the preparation of the financial statements, so as the Auditor General, we did not appoint the consultants. It's the NRCS that appointed the consultants to prepare the financial statements. That was done for two cycles because of this vacant position of the financial manager. So in terms of proper preparations of the financial statements, that you'd see that the finance managers would be the one responsible for preparing the financial statements, and then they'd be reviewed by the CFO and then approved by the CEO. So that layer of preparation was not there. Hence, they required the financial the consultants to prepare the financial statements. As you noted, the qualification still remained. The impact of their appointment is not really seen in terms of their assistance in that space. Instead, we even have a further regression in terms of the qualification paragraphs in NRCS. With regards to the implementation of the finance plan and the methodology which they undertook in trying to curb or to move from the qualification space to a better outcome, what happened in this, we found weaknesses in terms of the percentage or the estimates that they used to estimate the number of customers that should be that they should be billing for the levies. So the percentage that they used was incorrect. They couldn't. They were unable to provide the necessary assumptions or thinking process behind why they decided to choose that assumption or the estimate, the percentage that they used for billing those, for saying that these are the number of customers that should be paying us, and hence we are recognizing them, and they should be paying us, paying them a certain amount of revenue. The other thing is that they didn't include new customers in their revenue collection, recognizing the revenue, and so it was the incorrect rate, and they didn't consider new customers, and either they didn't include admin expenses and penalties for those customers that paid late. So that also contributed to the revenue qualification. With regards to the fraud allegations that came to our attention, there was actually a number of allegations, if I can remember, over 10, but I cannot really say the full extent as to the details of those allegations, but they were in the space of supply chain management, IT systems, as well as payroll. So those, as I said, were communicated to management, and they are fully aware of those. Some were also linked to the IT system, weaknesses around the IT systems, as the IT system has not been updated and upgraded for the past 5 years, which also as a consequence led to some differences that we noted between the GL, General Ledger, and the TB, although the differences were not so material, but that is actually an indicator of some sort of fraud. So if there's weaknesses of the IT system that produces the very financial statements that management will be reporting on, then you'll find those sort of challenges with regards to the allegations of fraud. So during the audit, the entity submitted the financial statements on time on the 31st of May, and on those financial statements, they were for provision for leave and employee benefits. Initially there were no amounts that were provided because they hadn't yet received the full information from payroll to be able to provide an amount. Then later, they were able to get all the information from payroll and submitted that one. But still, the schedules were incomplete. The schedules were not correct, and we were unable to audit those records or schedules that support the financial statements. I think that's it for my question.
Maybe before you proceed, I was actually looking at the two entities that came up as challenging. The SABS actually went to slide 9. And on the slide 9, one was actually just looking at that in the 5 years, just where it's at, you know, where it's actually going. You can actually see that there's consistency on the NRCS, which is just out completely. And at the point of actually the vacancy rates being higher than what is normal, the 20% one was actually thinking it might be something in terms of intervention, which we may actually say from the year, say 2014-15, what might have happened throughout, because I'm sure it's not a period less than a financial year that we have experienced that. I'm not sure what would be leading challenges in terms of actually getting the kind of response that will help stabilize and bring about change. If ever there was any level of engagement or discussion on that, or process that was agreed upon to do, take corrective measures. So I'm just saying, one is just thinking on that, if there's any comment, it might be actually quite helpful. But the other one is the SABS. Same logic in terms of maybe trying to see where it's at. And one can see that there are parts where it actually shoots up completely. Other point, it seems to be actually getting better. In other areas, it's actually completely out because it's just on the red light. So I'm not sure as well, because I was just thinking, because on those two, without the NLC, but I was just saying in terms of the two, those are the two glaring challenges we have in terms of entities we have on the list. And one was actually hoping that maybe sense of what would have been discussed at various points and what kind of intervention would have been proposed, suggested, and what happened in terms of not being able to turn things around. So I'm just giving those two as just a general comment, just to say maybe from your side, if ever there's any, you know, point you'd like to raise in line with that. Because on our part, we're sitting with the same problem. In this five-year period, SABS is more complicated to understand how can they, jump up and down so much. But in terms of the NRCS, looks like there's been some things which has been there across, and it's been just a permanent problem. And why actually no change actually happened, or what no intervention was done, what have we actually really missed to be able not to allow, you know, some change to actually take place on that? So I'm just saying that's a general comment I'd like just to raise. If ever you want to comment on that, that would be fine. And then maybe ask you to continue in response to the questions asked by members. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'll respond on NRCS, right? I'll start by saying we were ordered and reported, and there's a slide that shows our audit efforts, which distinguishes us from the private sector auditing in that we audit and then continue to engage with management at repeated intervals. And one of those instruments is the status of records. And it starts to answer the question that one of the honorable members asked, to say, in our audit machinery, how often do we get close enough to the department and the entities to keep them abreast of the early warning signals? So we'll have signed off our audit, and generally 6 months after the audit, maybe September or so, we try and go in, after this process, we usually go in around October and November. We go in at that time because between the finalization, management would have had some sense of what is wrong. We would have confirmed through our audit process on the extent of the errors, and they have a responsibility every year after the outcome of the audit to put an action plan that is going to address the problems that we have highlighted. In putting our audit report, we go as far as detailing what we believe the root causes are, so that they understand whether there are internal control deficiencies, whether there are systemic failures. We give root causes as well as related recommendations. Theirs is to take our recommendations and develop an action plan which is monitored. Then we will come and confirm whether they've made any progress in attending to the early warning signals. And as indicated on the status of record slide, we have seen inertia in the area of NRCS. It's been one over the 5 years where you can see, despite our audit, year-end audit, despite our status of record intervention, to continue to highlight and emphasize what we left them with at the year-end audit, there has been no progress. So I think the management team needs to account to this committee on what it is that is preventing them from doing their job. I just want to reemphasize on the accountability wheel, which talks about plan, do, checked, act, where NRCS management is responsible. The responsibilities of accounting officer, Section 55, are very clear. And theirs is to start to attend to the basics. The basics are not being attended to. The checking is not being done. I'm going to use the example of the financial statement. There's a CFO in place. Notwithstanding a CFO not being in place, there was a gap, yes, at the financial management. But if the internal controls around the preparation of the financial statements, reconciliations of bank accounts and critical things was done, it would start to take them out of the qualification. So those basics are not in place. Then right at the end, consultants need to be hired.
there's nothing wrong with hiring consultants to augment the skills and the capacities of a department or an entity, but we're expecting that a salary is already being paid by government. Now you're going to pay consultants to render services that ought to already have been rendered. At the very least, there must be some value for money for government. It cannot be that when the financials are done, we come and there's a deterioration, we raise bigger issues. It begs the question, what was that money spent for? And over the 5 years, the similar issues have been arising, with a deterioration this year in that payroll, which constitutes about 80% of the financial statement of NRCS, we had limitation of scope. So I'm worried about the entirety of the NRCS, the maybe management not taking the audit process seriously, management not taking consequences against those who do the wrong things. As a result, even those who are attempting to do the right things could be tempted to now recognize a culture that condones inertia. On the items of fraud, so I think, Chair, to your question to say, what would have our engagements been? We had a meeting with the management and with the CEO to express our concern about their inability to account for 80% of the line item of the financial statement, which talks to payroll. One of the fraud indicators, as mentioned by Morunga, also related to that area. Now, the limitations of the audit, by its very nature, is that it is not designed to be able to detect and conclude on fraud conclusively. We'll be able to do procedures, but those procedures will be limited. And that is why we have reported to the department on the allegations around fraud. And we look forward to, when we engage them, to understanding what they have instituted, whether there's an investigation, to get to the bottom of the issue, because from an audit point of view, we cannot design procedures that go further. So ours then, when we go back, would be to ask the department and the minister what progress, if any, they have made in trying to deal with the fraud allegations, and then we'll see how far that is. We encourage them to take action because we need a firm tone at the top that is going to deal with consequences and set a corrective action in the entire environment of NRCS. I think I wanted to give that caveat because it also goes to the question of one of the members asked, are there necessary experts available in that environment? There are gaps with critical positions being vacant. The people there are not necessarily always attending to things with the requisite discipline, as evidenced by using consultants, and no one is held accountable. So it creates a culture of complacency and a disregard for doing the right thing, which is why year on year they continue to be in the purple zone with a deterioration in this current year in that the areas of non-compliance have increased significantly. So it is the one that we think is not doing justice to the green that we see in the portfolio, and it needs to be curtailed with the utmost urgency, and they could act now. We encourage acting now on accountability in the area of NRCS. And I think SABS, there's been slippages, but I think from what Khadi explained, I think they are firmly aware of the issues. The action plan has been developed, and it sounds like they're on the right path. So what is going to be required from them is a firm oversight on the action plan and constant monitoring so that there is going to be a turnaround in the next year. Let me let the team answer the rest of the questions, and now I will come back to the one that relates to the expanded mandate. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Chair. With regards to SABS, yes, we've seen a whole lot of fluctuations, and I'm sure the Honourable Chair and the Portfolio Committee, as they would know, another big dip that happened between 16, 17, 18 was the whole administration as well. because the administration meant that a board that would normally consist of seven plus, at least at minimum, all seven members would then reduce to two people. And the focus there was more to turn around the operation, which is very understandable because of the issues that were there in terms of then the revenue generation, in terms of then the permits, in terms of then the loss of customers because of testing, and that is the right focus. However, then I think it's a contributing factor as well in terms of to the reporting functions as well as the whole collating and reviewing of information, because at the same time as you having your procurement team down, you having your laboratory in the laboratories and all of that, you still have to account, and all that information needs to be collated and then presented as you would want to for it to make it to the annual report, and it needs to be in a certain format. And to make another point was then they changed the reporting framework as well. So the reporting framework now changed from they used to use SACAP, so now we had to move from either GRAP or IFRS. And at that point, that's when the board was not there, so then the GM had to be the acting CFO. But overall, in terms of vacancies, that has now kind of stabilized. But I think the key important overall vacancy that we have, that is exists at the SABS, is then the board. And the missing link is then those financial reporting expertise in terms of board level at oversight, because you find that the CFO has other things, and there's not necessarily other than the audit committee at the top, but then there's then that a vacuum or a gap in terms of the reporting side of things as a result. So as a result of that, like the honorable member has noted, yes, the fact that they moved from a disclaimer to a qualified, it's an improvement. However, as a problem, like we indicated, because the financial viability side of things is being taken off, restoring customer confidence, getting the labs to work again. So like the CE has also highlighted, then it becomes critical that the turnaround strategy is actually scrutinized and not necessarily done on a high level, because it's now been proven that once you move focus to a certain thing, to a specific area, then the other one lacks. We move to resolve operations, then the reporting and the compliance side of things then lags behind. So I think at SABS, like the CEO has already touched, then it will become critical that turnaround strategy and that audit action plan is then done, and we've already engaged at different levels with the administrators, with the audit committee, and we engage regularly also on the details of the of the technical issues that they have, because at SABS, another factor that has been a bit complex in recent has been the parent-subsidiary relationship between SABS and the subsidiary, which is SABS Commercial. So we find ourselves having to deal with the complicated accounting reporting issues, like your loans receivable now, your investment in a subsidiary, which the framework normally requires you to take into account other market kind of related factors, whereas it becomes hard or complicated to simplify to reporting it in the public sector, to say it's not as that high level to say it's influenced at that level of markets and all of that, but we do have those instruments sitting now in the financial statements, in the loan receivable, in the the investment, because then you have the investment between the two. However, as Tepo also already covered, would like to just say, in addition to the turnaround strategy being focused on, I think we also have to highlight the compliance with the PFMA as well. We're finding that SCM department as well is a bit isolated, but they have started measures in place. There's an SCM GM now that's been appointed that was helping at DTI. So as the CE has indicated, we'll see in the next status of records review. However, they have taken note of all the issues that they have, and then they are putting measures in place. So now in terms of SCM, it will be the contract management to say now compiling actually properly all the contracts that the SABS has, and to monitor that the overspending, because the problem was that for starters, there was not all the contracts are still manual. So you couldn't necessarily, you don't necessarily have a separate system where you have all contracts where you can check expiry, compare all that, and then to make sure that actually the PFMA is then complied with, because then the PFMA requires that you shouldn't overspend on a contract by 15% or not. And there's also, if you overspend, the necessary approvals that you require. So now they're integrating the different units, because you have contracts over different units, becomes critical, and the entity will be then looking into that in terms of trying to manage that irregular expenditure. So in terms of the laboratories, yes, the laboratories are there. A little to function, and what it's happening now. There's also an analysis between the laboratories, like I was saying. There's also an indicator now that measures how productive are the laboratories or how operational are, and then you find that just there's one or two that will close down because of not breaking even in terms of revenue not being generated, not being enough to cover the cost. But as already indicated, the main issue with the laboratories was also the aging testing infrastructure. And as part of the turnaround strategy, I think the management can also break down more in detail and go into that. But in terms of that, there is an intervention as well and money set aside from DTI to then assist in revamping that. I think the critical thing then becomes, which we've also highlighted to the minister in terms of briefing them and as well as the management, it becomes then ensuring that the response is not slow, ensuring that the agency that's required in terms of acquiring this infrastructure and doing those proper research and everything to get the correct items then happens. However, there is measures and actions now currently underway in order to improve that. But I think the entity in the department will be able to expand more on that. And I think in relation to that's all on
SABS. Honourable member is saying the laboratories should be gone by now. By the time he received the report and looking at that now, they should be gone, because it was a very difficult report he received. So I can see in his face he's a bit strained. But I'm sure that we can follow through, Mbuyana, on that one. But it was not actually your presentation. Obviously, we're not going to discuss that. It was something else. So if you can actually finalize your responses, floor is still yours.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The one on recommendation from the DTI to assist NRCS, I think it's addressed to the DTI department. And the one where the Honorable Member said we can't accept mediocrity in SABS, I think it's a statement we don't have to respond to it, Honorable Chair. And the one... I don't have a position there.
We didn't hear you.
Okay.
We didn't hear that thing. So we can pass.
Okay. I'll respond to Honorable Chair on the one around the EDD, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, where based on the feedback that we received so far, the affected person was dismissed, but the recovery of the money has not taken place yet. That's the position that we know now. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. I will come in with, there was one question from one of the Honourable Members to say, given the uninspiring audit outcomes and our expanded mandate, why would these two NRCAs and SABC having escaped? So because it was effective 1st of April 2019 and we ultimately have to get to 100% coverage, we set as an office and opted for a phased-in approach. And in our phased-in approach, we, as I mentioned earlier, we selected 16 auditees. The criteria for selecting the 16 auditees, amongst others, was looking at making sure that there's coverage across the entire country so that we have exposure in the provinces and all the related national audits in terms of working a journey on how those amendments ought to be like. So that was one of the criteria. The other one was looking at a history of audit outcomes, and those with an undesirable audit outcome would have gotten in there. So these two do look like they have the right traits to have been caught by that net. But one of the other ones that was the driver in getting into those 16 and they would have escaped the fold is the quantum of the irregular expenditure over the couple of years. And you would know that irregular expenditure is quite high and undesirable audit outcomes are spread across the country. So we ended up with the 16 who are potentially the most biggest culprits of those three requirements. So these ones would not have gotten in there, not because they also don't have undesirable outcomes, but their quantum of irregular expenditure was less than those that made it to the top. And we've finished phase one for PFMA. We're doing it now for MFMA, and then we'll upscale, and AG will communicate in due course what the next phase of coverage is going to be, with the ultimate outcome of aiming to get to 100%. So there are many audits where we could see that having implemented these amendments would have been desirable, it could have curbed. But as I mentioned earlier, what we are wanting to do with these amendments is for them to serve rather as a deterrent and get management before we go in and start applying these to do the right things, as the legislation is already prescriptive and requires them to do so. And then ours comes in as the last alternative, and hopefully we don't need to invoke those checks. I hope that answers that question satisfactorily. Thank you.
Did you?
Just to respond to the question about what interventions the department has made, and as was indicated, so under the DTI portfolio, you would see there are 13 entities that falls under the DTI and 3 under economic development. Of the 13, as you know, about 10 years ago, 9 years ago, since I've been the DG of the department, all of them were in this position of lack of governance, bad report from AG and so on. So as you can see, we've cleaned up. 10 of them are now at clean audit.
the reason why these two are particularly difficult is because what we've done now, and they will give you a more detailed report tomorrow, and I'll give in my report later. But these two, it appears that it's both the board, because SAB SABS has had a board, and it looks like it's the top management team that have been, let's say, negligent. So the remedial, the consequence management we've put in place over the past 2 years or year and a half, we've completely removed the board, and we've also taken and dismissed the CEO and deputy CEO in NRCS. So we've cleaned up the management team, and we have replaced them. So, for example, now Bureau of Standards is under administration. We have seconded, and you will see tomorrow, we seconded three administrators we've put in place to manage the place. We've seconded our Deputy Director General, Garth Strachan, who is now the acting CEO there. We've also seconded a COO to Bureau of Standards, mm-hmm. and that's why you can see they are in it, and there's a turnaround plan, which they will report to you tomorrow. There's some progress. Unfortunately, it looks like the NRCS, again, same problem, but they haven't showed the improvement. There, we've only replaced the CEO, who is from a former DTI employee, our former legal officer. He's now the CEO. But it looks like the problem is much deeper. And what we're going to have to consider, given this report now, is that we may have to second more staff, because it looks like the problem is with the CFO, the IT officer, and so on. And Chair, there's the broader discussion, but it looks like we're going to need more powers as a department to have step-in rights with, because as you know, under the PFMA, these entities are nominally of equal status to the department. They are an accounting officer, I'm an accounting officer. I have no legal right. So luckily we have had strong ministers, and so we use the executive authority, and that is why we've placed these. But as a department, you don't have those powers, but I think that is one of the strengthening. But as I said, we are now in this phase of cleaning up. It's a new CEO in place. It's been there for about a year or so, and they will report on what they're doing to cleaning up. But we will actively support now maybe a much more rigorous place that we actually second more staff to turn it around until it's like we've done with Bureau of Standards, where we second people, and after 2 or 3 years, we then put in place a new management team.
So that is the introduction of the next presentation that we have just had. Thank you very much, DG. And maybe for the AG team, if I can actually have you concluding remarks, then we can actually then have lunch, and then take the DG in terms of the next presentation. So it integrates quite well. Can I check his office closing comments?
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I think mouthful has been, people have said enough. I think we're good to go. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Most appreciated. We will actually have a 30-minute lunch. If ever you can join us, I think it might be enough to be able to actually schedule. But thanks very much for your contribution and your participation in our process. Most welcome. Thank you.
I get authorized deductions every month.